Welcome everybody to Two Teachers Walk Into a Bar. I'm Nancy and Charlotte is at the dentist right now. I'm sure she's having a thrilling time. Hopefully lots of, what is that, nitrous oxide that they give you? Is that what it is, John?
I think so. I don't like the dentist, so I try and stay away from that.
Yeah, me either. I'd rather go to Disneyland. And as much as I hate Disneyland, that's really saying something. So yesterday was Valentine's Day, and we sure hope you were able to get some ideas from last week's episode and keep the leash on all of that puppy love. Remember that Two Teachers Walk Into a Bar can be heard wherever you listen to your podcasts. And do click subscribe and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And don't be afraid to send us your comments and questions to twoteacherswalkintoabar@gmail.com. But today, everybody, we have such an exciting guest. In my opinion, I couldn't aim any higher than John Baker, who is principal extraordinaire. So he is going to share with us a glimpse into the mind of a principal. And I know principals really establish the culture at a school. Their vision and their leadership style creates the experience that teachers tend to have. And if you've been in the profession long enough, you know what it's like to work for different principals. Many teachers, especially new ones, express things like fear of observations or even just the principal opening the door and walking in unannounced. But we hope that this interview today will help allay your fears and give you a little glimpse into John's former role as the principal. Now he's retired and living large and loving life. Not that you weren't loving life as a principal, right?
Right. I loved it. It was great.
Yeah. And you were the leader of many wonderful schools and even a little bit of experience working in the district office and the human resources department. You want to tell us a little bit about your background in education, John?
Sure. First of all, Nancy, I just want to thank you for having me on your show. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
I got to tell everyone that Nancy is an amazing teacher. Loved going into her classroom. We had a great time when I was able to go in there and see all the good things you were doing in the class. And I mean that wholeheartedly. You are an amazing teacher. And so
thank you again, so much, John. You're going to make me cry.
I hope so. I think I made you cry. Honestly, a couple times. I don't know.
Well, yeah, probably more than once. Probably more than once, but all for good reasons. And the days that you came into my classroom and, like, I'd see the door open, I'd see you walk in and you kind of, like, plant yourself toward the back countertop. And the kids knew when they saw Mr. Baker walk in, they were in for a good time. Because I'll share with the audience, you're quite the punster. But even aside from puns, just flowing like a river, you are so funny. And it's that sense of humor that you brought to my classroom, to your job, to our school that made Emblem such a wonderful place. Your sense of humor among so many other qualities that you have.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. That's very kind of you. You know, a little bit about my career. First of all, I had no idea that I was even going to go into education coming out of college. I did what most...
me either.
Yeah. I was an econ poli sci major, and you know, I did what most people do coming out of college. I competed in luge for 4 years. So,
see, and I was the rare exception that did not compete in luge.
So I did that for 4 years, and then and during that time, you know, I needed to earn some money, so I became a substitute teacher, and really kind of liked education. Went back, got my credential, and one of my dad's best friends was an elementary school principal and a great mentor of mine, Ken Hennessy. And he said, aww, John, you know, you really should be teaching. And so I said, oh, you know, I thought about it. And the funny thing was that I didn't, because I majored in economics, there wasn't really a credential for me to teach. I needed some type of credential because economics is not a, what do you call it? It's not one of the primary credential.
Right, it's not a core subject.
Yeah, core subject.
Yeah.
You'd have to have history or something like that. And so I took the NTE and PE. because I just finished doing the luge.
Gosh.
And I passed. So
that's so funny. And you mentioned the NTE. I think I came in the year after the last year they gave that nightmare assessment. I took the MSAT. The NTE was like this monster of an assessment for teachers coming into the profession. Did you pass it the first time?
I did. It was in PE. And the irony of the whole thing is I had just finished a luge certification class so I could be a luge coach. And a lot of the questions in the PE National Teachers Exam had the same type of questions on it. So I did quite well. So my dad's friend, you know, Ken Hennessy, says, hey, you know what? Our district has an elementary PE position that's open. Would you be interested? And I'm like, I guess. I did my student teaching at the high school level. And I'm like, oh my gosh, elementary. I'm not even sure what to
what
do
are
with
these
them.
Little creatures, right. They look like ants from up here.
Exactly. So I had a great principal, a really good guy. His name was Wayne Sparks. And he actually, my first year of teaching PE, he showed me EdCal. You know what EdCal is. It's that magazine.
No,
it's a magazine that shows all the administrative jobs in California.
Oh.
So he sat me down. And he goes, look, this is what you need to do in your future. You need to be an administrator. I'm like, I just started teaching.
Right.
And so I ended up being a teacher of the year. He actually campaigned for me, which was kind of
oh,
funny.
Oh, my goodness.
And, yeah, he did.
I didn't know all these things about you, John. I feel like I've been living a lie.
And then, you know, I just had great mentors along the way. Sally Buckley was one. Paula Willebrands, you know, I was an assistant principal, and they were my principals. And Sally was just a great person in Glendale. I started my career in Glendale. And then Kathy Laws, you might know Kathy. And
I do.
Then Jerry Hooger, and they really mentored me to the point to where I became a principal after being an assistant principal. And then I did decide to apply for an HR position, the director of personnel in Saugus. And I was very fortunate to get that position. I worked with Rick Grove, and I was so excited to recruit and go out and you know, that's really my personality. I love meeting people and telling people what was so great about the district and everything else. And as soon as I got there, the economy hit the skids. And you know as well as I do, unfortunately, we had to lay a whole bunch of people off. And
well,
that was just
yes. Ironically, I have the distinction of having been in the group that you laid off. And I thought, who is this John Baker guy who's standing in for Rick Grove in this meeting telling me I don't have a job anymore? And of course, you know, my inclination would have been to dislike you in some way, John. But and to be truth be told, I remember that meeting so well. And I remember you were so uncomfortable because it was the last message you would want to be giving a group of people.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so then eventually when I was able to reapply to the district when they were hiring again, there you were on my interview committee. And I had such a great it was a great comfort to see you there. And of course, because of the vibe you just give off to everybody. So,
well, yeah, thank you. So yeah, it was really a difficult time. No, not at all. It was a very difficult time. But, you know, I spent 4 years in that position and learned a lot at the district level. But I really missed being on site. I missed the everyday vibe of a school. And at that time, Emblem had closed down for 3 years to build a two-story building, and they were going to reopen it. And so I went to our superintendent and I said, you know, I really have a desire to go back to the site and be a site administrator. And if I could possibly apply to be the principal at Emblem, because actually in my earlier part of my career, I was the principal at Emblem for a few years. And so to be able to go back and kind of combine part of the old Emblem with a new Emblem was really exciting to me. And I knew that they needed to have a certain number of students come to the school because it wouldn't be, you know, you had to have a certain population. Otherwise, it wouldn't be financially feasible to open up the school. And so they went out to the parent community and surveyed the parents to see what kind of focus school they may want to support. And STEM came out on top. And ironically, I just talked to my brother, who is in education as well, and talked about what would a cool STEM school look like. And we bantered back and forth and everything. So I just put down our thoughts and presented it. And lo and behold, she said, yeah, you know, why don't you be the principal at Emblem?
How exciting.
It was. It was very exciting. But at the same token, I also had my role as the director of personnel, and Rick Grove had left the district. So I was assuming some of his duties as well. And now the very interesting thing in this whole thing was hiring staff for Emblem, because I'm personnel.
Oh my gosh, that's right.
And I didn't want my colleagues to be upset with me.
It's kind of like in Vegas, you're sitting at the table and you're the dealer.
Exactly. Hey, I got the cards in front of me.
Right.
But I couldn't really deal the cards in my favor because my colleagues would be very upset. You know?
Of course.
And so all I did was I went to each site and I presented what my vision was for Emblem at that time. And if they were interested, great. If they weren't, then that's fine too. I didn't want to, and I was true to that trip. I didn't want to recruit per se. I really wanted to leave it up to the teacher that wanted to come. And so that's how I became the principal at Emblem. It was a challenge at first. We had 2 half days together as a staff to plan out how we were going to launch the school with a STEM focus. And then we started. And but you know what? It's fantastic staff. It's always been a fantastic staff. I was just so blessed to have the people that chose to come. It was wonderful.
Well, I definitely felt like the light was shining down on me when I came back the year after, when Saugus was hiring teachers back again. And again, you were on my interview panel. And then I got the phone call saying, yes, we have a position for you. And when I found out it was Emblem, I was so excited because I knew that there had been so much buzz in the community about your opening the year before and what an exciting program you had developed with the staff. And I couldn't wait to be a part of it. I think I may have still had the phone in my hand talking to personnel when they told me that my position, and I was in my car driving to Emblem. I ran into the office.
I remember. Nancy told me I'm going to be teaching here.
And I had probably tears in my eyes. I remember Jill McCarty saying, can I help you? And I'm like, I'm one of your new teachers. Oh my gosh. I think I was the only one that got to go there that year, that was placed there that year. Boy, was I fortunate, because those next 8 years, to see what a staff can do with the support of an administrator who has a clear vision of what should be offered to students and in what way. I mean, and then, but the big key component here, John, is, and it's something that principals, I think, sometimes try to manufacture, but it's impossible to manufacture, is the feeling that your administrator trusts you as a professional, respects you as a professional, supports you as a professional. You were an ethical leader. You were a curricular leader. You checked every box in what a teacher needs to feel supported and capable of going into that classroom every day. Because even though our students were, you know, because parents were able to enroll their kids from around the district, we had a whole mishmash of I don't know what I want to say here, but a mishmash of a student population. And with your leadership, it all, even though there were times that we did more than just scratch our heads, but maybe even banged our heads against the wall, we all knew that it was going to be okay. We were going to work it out as a team. And that even if we didn't all have a consensus, we trusted in your decision-making always. Always.
Well, it's 2-8th Street. I had a staff that was phenomenal, and the ideas and the and how the teachers taught in the classroom was just incredible. I like I said, I was very blessed to have the staff that I had and who chose to come. Each person made that puzzle happen. It wasn't just me. Trust me, it wasn't. It was.
That was kind of interesting too. Yeah, because each teacher had their quote unquote thing, whether it was being on leadership, developing curriculum, creating technology that the entire staff could use, like Flight Suit Fridays, or all of the math lessons for sixth grade that were done by Shannon King and Shauna Pinto. Just such amazing resources. But that was a teacher commitment. And mm-hmm. It was a commitment because they knew that it was appreciated and that it was valued and that mm-hmm. people would, you know, use to the students' benefit, whatever it is that they created. So that was just...
Well, we had Maria Blue, who was a NASA master teacher. We had a teacher who was, a master gardener. And, you know, you take those skill sets and you bring it together, and it was truly a wonderful experience. So it was great.
Jennifer Seibel, the master gardener. And
Jennifer was fantastic. Oh my gosh. She had an amazing garden for the kindergartners. And then she, you know, and that carried over to third grade as well. And it was just, she was amazing. Yeah.
Well, then what was so cool was I remember where we were giving standardized testing when we were doing it in the computer lab. We all walked past the garden, and even those kids in the upper grades would say, oh, that's a such and such. That's a such and such. And they could appreciate their growth. I loved all those things about Emblem. Yep. We did such unique things for our students to give them just a really solid education. So we're, you know, a lot of new teachers listen to our show, John, and I think, like, I remember being a new teacher, but I was in a different district, and I don't know that a principal walking in ever made me really nervous.
Except me, right?
No, the only thing that made me nervous about you walking in was, would I be able to come up with as many puns as I needed to to keep the conversation going? But teachers are so concerned about observations and... Like if somebody is misbehaving during an observation or things like that, are there any words of wisdom you could share with new teachers about what you're looking for, like maybe the top three things you're looking for in their classroom, and B, is it wrong in an observation to just stop your lesson? Because I've told so many student teachers, just stop because you've lost, you know.
Yeah.
What can you say about observations?
Yeah, it's interesting because remember, I was a teacher too, right? I was a classroom teacher. Only my classroom was outside. And so my very first observation that I had, you know, I'm nervous as heck, and principal's there, and actually the assistant superintendent of curriculum was in charge of the PE program. And so she came up too. So I'm like, oh gosh, this better go well, you know? And I have 100 kids, right? And this particular campus sat right on two major streets in downtown Glendale. And one of the little areas, trucks would always sit there and just, you know, the guy was taking his break or whatever the case was, and leave their motor running. So rah, 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 the whole time. And then, you know, you're trying to talk over that, but I had a bee come into my class. Yeah, and they're swarming around, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, the kids are out of control. Do I kill the bee or don't I kill the bee? Because if I kill the bee, then am I going to get written up for that because, you know, I killed a bee? And so I get it. I get the nervousness and everything else. And the one thing in Saugus is that our observations, we're all not the observations themselves, but the outlining of what they're supposed to be and all the rules and regulations and all that was in a booklet called Improvement of Instruction Handbook, right? And so that is really the focus, is improvement of instruction. As an educational leader, when I go in for an informal observation or formal observation, my goal is not, I'm going to try and get you. You know, that is right. Not my mindset whatsoever. My mindset is, hey, if I see something that's really positive, or if I see something that could, you know, we could tweak and maybe it could improve instruction, that's my job to communicate it to you. I'm not there to try and say, oh, I found something, now I'm going to get you. You know, that's not me. That's not how I operate. In fact, a lot of times with informal observations and trying to go to classrooms frequently is a benefit to the teachers. Because if I get a phone call from a parent and the parent says, you know, I know I've heard from so-and-so that such and such is happening in this classroom, I can say, well, I was just in there the other day and this is what I noticed. This is what the teacher actually had to say. You know, I sometimes hit right at the right time, or, you know, they may come back and say, well, when you go into the classroom, you know, they're going to change. Well, that's really, really difficult to do when you come in unannounced and you've got 30 kids sitting there. You can't just snap your fingers and have a different room environment. And so it gave me an opportunity, first, to see what's going on. And second, it's a great support for the teacher, because just that, you know, I can answer questions for parents about what's happening in the class. And 99% of the time, great things are going on. You know, they're humans in there. And, you know, obviously right. There's kids and things can happen. And, you know, but if you get if you go in enough, you get a sense of what really is going on in that classroom, how the environment feels, because each teacher is different. You know, going into your class, there was a certain way that I approached you and your kids, and we had a lot of fun, but we always brought it back to the educational, you know, why we're there, you know, the perseverance of our academics and yes. our character, right? And so even though I do have a sense of humor, I also have a job to do in the sense that mm-hmm. I want my school to be the best, right? And if yes. there's something that I can do to help in improving instruction, that's my job, right? So I know you're always going to have some type of, oh my gosh, you know, he's coming in today, especially a formal observation. And your question about, should I stop? What should I do? Well, I view a formal observation very similarly to what's happening in your class every day. What would you normally do, right?
Yes, if exactly.
The ones that I go, oh my gosh, you know, you have your lesson plan. We've talked about your lesson plan. If it's not going quite the way you planned it, then pivot. Go ahead. It's okay. If you continue with that lesson plan, knowing it's going to fail because, you know, it just wasn't going the right way, then I'm going to say something. I'm going to say, you probably should have gone off of your lesson plan and, you know, made those corrections so they'd work out. Because to me, that's what you do on a daily basis. It's not just for a formal observation. I'm here to help you. I'm here to provide, you know, some type of feedback to you that's going to hopefully make an impact for you and your kids. I had the challenge. I always challenge myself, and this came from Kathy Laws, that I had to give, in my opinion, at least two pieces of feedback that you could use. And when I went into classes and I thought the lessons were like outstanding, it was a challenge for me to find something that I could give that would hopefully be feedback to the teacher that they could use, you know, in the future. So that's how I viewed observations and informal or formal.
I love that you brought up the fact that coming in unannounced is really a benefit for the teacher.
It is.
Because I think that so many people instinctively want to rail against that and say, you know, to the union president, hey, I've got my principals coming in every day unannounced. It's your school. You're allowed to do that. And by the way, teachers, it is the best way. When someone would say to me, oh, I love working for so-and-so because they never come into my classroom, my question is always, what are you going to do when a person or a parent questions what you're doing in your room? Mm-hmm. Your principal can't speak to evidence. Mm-hmm. And right. I knew with you, because you were in my room all the time, our rooms all the time, that a parent, you would have volumes of evidence to share.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. And, you know, when would you shut down a lesson? If something really is going on. I mean, if a student starts throwing things in class or some,
sure,
for some reason has a major meltdown, I might say to the teacher, okay, I get it. Let's try and get this student under control, and I'll come, sure, back another day and we'll do another lesson. You know, because sometimes things do happen, and I get it. But yeah, I also have to know the pulse of what's going on at the school too. I was never, yes, I didn't like hanging out in my office. I didn't like to do that. I like to be out on the playground in classes. I just like to be out there because I could really see and feel what was going on the site. And I felt that that was really important. That's how I operated. I never had the mindset of, I'm going to go into this classroom and I'm going to try and get this teacher or find something, right, on this teacher so I can hopefully down the road get rid of them. You know, that was not the way I operated. My goal was, hey, we're in this all together, and what can we do? What's best for kids? You know, every one of my mentors that I mentioned, you know, they had one common suggestion for me, or a piece of advice. And that was, if you have a decision that you need to make, make sure that it's best for kids, not necessarily best for you or best for the teacher, but what is truly best for kids? Because if you made a decision that was best for kids, then that decision was probably a good decision.
That is a really good marker to sort of gauge everything by. And I think when we consider that ourselves as teachers, then we are much more equipped to understand the decision making of the principal, because that is all that it comes down to. I know that a lot of people right now are struggling with, and it might be a new principal thing, so I don't know if you're too familiar with what's happening, although I know through, you know, administrator meetings and things like that, people share what they're doing, but there's a big push for principals to go into teachers' classrooms and leave a note like, I see this, I wonder this, like, I wonder why you're doing this, or why your students couldn't answer this question, or why regarding how well they assess what they're understanding on their own students. And to me, like, teachers are becoming so incredibly frustrated with these little notes because they're not sure what to do with that. I understand from this note that you asked a student how they understood the lesson and the student didn't know how to answer your question. That doesn't mean they didn't understand the lesson. Mm-hmm. And it's just, that does feel like a gotcha to a lot of teachers. Mm-hmm. So, but I don't recall you doing that. I know you would leave me a note when you'd leave, or you'd send me an email on your way out the door and I'd get it at my next break that said, "Hey, Nancy, great to be in your room today. Loved this, loved that, noticed this, maybe you'd want to throw up sentenced brick and mortar for that." And it was like, that was useful to me. But the things that are happening today in some of the classrooms, I think teachers feel like they're being got.
Yeah, I can't really speak to that. I can only speak to my, you know, the way that I felt I should do that. Because if you go into a classroom and you leave and you don't really give any type of feedback, they wonder, okay, what do you think about my class? You know,
that is so
like
true.
It, not like it, what's he doing?
That is so,
right,
true.
And so I feel like, and you don't want that person to worry all day long, because it's going to affect their future lessons, right? Or it's going to make them feel unsettled during the entire day. So I felt that if I could find something, which I usually did, I mean, it wasn't hard to find something positive that went on during the lessons, especially with the staff I had, but I would try to leave some type of note. You know, the kids were really engaged, or loved this part of your lesson, or I didn't know this, or something like that, to at least make them feel settled and, okay, he's not going to hate what I did, right? If there was something that I saw glaring, I would probably approach the teacher at the end of the day and have a conversation with the teacher. I'm not going to just let it ride, right? I mean, not address it.
Of course.
So I'll address it at a different time. Hey, I noticed when I walked into your classroom that, you know, there was Jimmy in the back of the room reading a book while you were doing your lesson, you know, and he was hiding it under, it was a comic book underneath his desk, right? And you didn't notice that. So you may want to circulate around the room a little bit more and just see if it's a constant thing with him. I might approach it in that way, because what you don't know, you don't know. And I'm right. The extra set of eyes in the class. And if I can help you out in that way, then I will.
I love that. Yeah, that's a really good example of a constructive note to give, because providing that the lesson is being delivered appropriately, right? If that student isn't understanding, maybe it's because they have the comic book under their desk that that you wouldn't be aware of. I found right. myself oftentimes, because I had a lectern that my husband made for me. As you know, I yeah. often taught from the back of my room with my students facing away from me, because I could tell a lot more about how engaged uh-huh. they were from behind than looking straight at them in the face. Yeah. And I could manipulate my smart board with my pen from back there. So that was a... And it kept, you know, it kept the students like they knew Mrs. Tomei could be teaching from anywhere at any right. time.
Yeah. Yeah. I just reiterate that if I did see something, I would need to talk to the teacher at some point, you know.
Oh, and yes.
Just to give them a heads up. If I didn't provide any of that feedback at any time, then shame on me. You know, I'm
sure
I need to make sure that I communicate those things. But leaving the classroom, in my opinion, leaving the classroom with something that the person may be worrying about all day, I don't think that is as productive as possibly talking to them at the end of the day and just saying, or at recess or whatever the case might be, you know, and just bringing it to their attention.
Gotcha. Yeah, yeah. That's, I like the face-to-face if you're going to give a suggestion like
Absolutely.
That. I love that yeah. that's... So teachers who are feeling super overwhelmed right now at this particular time of year, they have about 70 something days left of school. And I know it's where there's that huge, you know, all of the long vacations are done. I guess spring break is on the horizon, but they're gearing up towards state testing. What sort of thoughts do you have for new teachers who are feeling that overwhelmed?
Walk into a bar?
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah. No, well, I think a lot of us did do that. Yeah.
Not a real bar though. I've seen kids walk into poles at lunch with the poles we had. They were looking at their lunches but no, you know,
I've done that myself, walking my class across the playground. Walked right. straight I was facing backwards and I walked into a pole. Yeah.
No, you know, it's interesting. You've been a mentor teacher, right? And yeah. I was a mentor teacher also. One of the things that we were, that they told us is that there's a natural progression for a new teacher. At the beginning of the school year, you know, you have this, I'm going to set the world on fire and I'm going to yeah. make a huge difference. And my class is going to be different than anyone else's because all my kids are going to be great. They're all going to listen to me and, you know, it's all going to be perfect. And then they get to around Christmas or, you know, Christmas break. And it's not quite exactly how they expected it to be. You know, I've got all this work to correct. I've got, you know, tons of emails. I've got to call this parent, call that parent. I've got some discipline in my class. I've got this. I've got that. I've got this. And they
pull
start feeling.
Programs.
Yeah. And they start yeah. feeling overwhelmed, right? It's like, oh, my gosh, I don't think I can make it through this year. Well, that's natural. That's a normal thing to have happen. But as they get towards spring break, it's like, you know what? I kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel. I think I can make it. I really think I can make it. So you see the trajectory going the different way, going, hey, I think I can do this. I know I can. And then as you get closer to the end of the year, it's like, oh, I made it. I did it. I made it through my first year. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to take what I learned and apply it to the following year, because I've already made it through a year now. So now I'm going to, you know, tweak what I did, understand what my failures were, understand what my successes were going to be, and the following mm-hmm. year is going to be better. So if they're feeling overwhelmed, that's a normal thing. That just happens. And, you know, my suggestions for them, one is that if they have failures in lessons or things like that, write that down in their lesson plan book. Make note of it. Because when they come back to that time of the year next year, they know not to make the same mistake again, right? Or do the same thing again, or you'll get the same result.
And that could be as simple as not using the certain materials they used for independent practice because they didn't directly reflect the standard.
Correct.
Right? Yeah. So yeah, all of those things that we need to change up that we're not going to remember year to year, not
exactly
the same lessons specifically, but don't use this material.
Yeah. Or this really worked well for me. The kids, I got them so engaged in the lesson. I'm going to do this again, you know, and just make notations throughout the year in your lesson plan book of what worked, what didn't work. The other thing too, is I glean on to some of those veteran teachers that have been through this and talk to them. Don't isolate yourself in the classroom during lunch or recess.
Right.
Get out. You know, you need to get out. You need to talk to others, even though you have all this work to do. I find it very beneficial that you have to have that teacher to teacher contact during the day too, because they may say, "Oh yeah, I just had that same issue," and then all of a sudden they feel a lot better, right? And so having that those conversations and the collegiality, I think, is extremely important, especially for all teachers, and especially for a new teacher. Yeah.
I completely agree with you. And I think also if there's if you have students that are presenting somewhat of a puzzle to you, I purposely didn't talk to last year's teachers about students that I knew were struggling with behavior. I purposely didn't talk to them because I wanted to start out fresh and see
totally what agree with you on that.
Be together. But eventually, if you've tried everything up your sleeve, then you probably should see if their former teacher was able to help. But I know a lot of people are struggling with student behaviors right now to the degree that they never have. And I don't know how much of that is COVID and how much of that is video game and how much of that is social media, but it's definitely unmitigated and unstructured time that they're experiencing outside of the classroom that's influencing that so much. We're not going to solve that problem today, but I do want to know too, under what circumstances do you think it's appropriate for teachers to send students to quote unquote
never
see the principal?
never.
Yeah, right?
No, I'm just kidding.
I'm kind of with you on that because I can count probably on one hand the number of times I did, but because in doing that, it's like saying I'm not the final stop. Like, I don't yield all the power. Go see someone who does.
Yeah.
I want it to always be perceived as.
I totally echo that. And that's what I was going to mention is that, you know, if you.
Oh, okay.
It's perfect. if you feel that the best, that the only thing that you can do is, you know, a kid is out of control a little bit. And you send the kid to the principal's office or assistant principal's office, you're giving up a lot of your power right there because the kid is trying to, you know, they're in battle with you, right? They want to push your buttons and see how far they can go. And if you relinquish that power of your own and say, you need to go see the principal, then they know they won, right? Now, I'm not saying never send a kid to the office because if it's jeopardizing a student's, the safety of another student, safety of the teacher, if the kid needs a real timeout of some sort, then that might be a good time to do it. Or just simply a call to the principal at times too. Hey, can you just do a walk through my class real quick? And that way you're not sending them to the principal. The principal's kind of coming to you. And the kid doesn't really know why I'm there. I'm just, if I'm going through the classrooms on a frequent basis, they'll think I'm just walking through and I may go to that student. Hey, how's your day today? How's everything going? You know, and try and work it that way. You know, but there are circumstances if you can't tolerate it anymore and it's really disruptive to the other kids in your class, you know, then that might be a time time to sound. Another option too is, I know you did this with some of the teachers on campus. Hey, so-and-so just needs a timeout. Can I give them their assignment and just go to your class for a few minutes after they finish the assignment, just send them back to me? It just gives them an easy timeout. It's not embarrassing. Just, hey, why don't you go visit so-and-so?
Right.
And they'll have you come back in a few minutes. All right. I think you need a timeout. It's a good time to take a timeout. That's another strategy. And you're not losing your power. You're still directing the situation, and it may help the kid. And when they come back, greet them positively like you always did. And
I love that. That is the key
right
there. You just hit the nail on the head with that, because it is about not just maintaining your own credibility and dignity by not losing it with these kids, but it's also about helping them not to lose it with themselves. And that is a very calm discussion about, hey, you know what? I know you, and I can tell that you're struggling right now. I want you to go out and take a breather. I'm going to send you to walk around the upstairs. We had an upstairs railing, and then come on back and let's make it work again. But if they see that you're not angry with them, you're trying to accommodate whatever it is that their behavior is seeking. Oftentimes it's just understanding that.
Yeah. And
seeking.
Also you can have a, just a, like a nonverbal communication with the student that you've worked out in advance with them. Just saying, hey, I really want you to succeed in my class. And I know sometimes it's really difficult and you get frustrated. So what I need to do, what I need you to do is let me know somehow that you need a break. And whether that's, I flip a coin on my desk, from red to yellow, or I do something that the other kids really don't see, I may come over and just say, hey, go ahead and take a lap around the railing and then come on back. All right. And you're giving them dignity in that. I also don't want people to think that I didn't deal with discipline. I did.
Oh no,
I did.
Did.
It's just a natural part of what happens at a school. But I'm talking in relation to the teacher really should think hard about when is the right time to send the child to the principal. Also, another very effective method is you could talk to the principal ahead of time and say, hey, if this kid, I'm having some troubles with him. If this kid is really doing something well in my class, is it okay if I send him to your office? Because I've done that too. And, you call up, hey, are you in your office? I need to send so-and-so real quick because they just got 100% on such and such, And so they'll come to my office and I will praise the heck out of that kid and then send him back. Right?
Yep. And right there, John, and again, I know I keep saying this, you just hit the nail on the head. That is the perfect symbiotic relationship between principal and teacher, where we are both supporting these kids, some of them who are struggling so hard just to sit in their chairs and to be able to say, I might be sending you with him to you with a single written sentence, but
that's
this will be the most that I have gotten from him all week. And then that child's perception, and this is the key to solving those behavior problems. They are telling themselves all day long that they are the bad kid. They are the bad kid. That's all they've ever heard. They hear it at home. They hear it at school. They hear it on the yard. They hear it in the classroom. They hear it from their peers. Just to have somebody with so much credibility, like the principal or the teacher, to say, I am so proud of you. That is sometimes all it takes to just start to make that little turn in their self-perception. And if we hit them and hit them and hit them with that positivity in opportunities that we find it over and over again, then we have turned it around for an otherwise career offender, if you will. You want to talk about the school to prison pipeline. I mean, it's those kids who see themselves as the criminal at such an early age. And we have to find those opportunities to sneak that positive self-talk in there, that positive experience in there. You are so good at that, John. And I,
discipline is really a hot button right now. And, I worked at a school where, they had tickets. You know, if you did an infraction, you got a pink ticket. If you had five pink tickets, you got a red ticket. If you got a red ticket, you have to spend so much time out of the classroom or something like that, you know?
That's right. And
what I learned from that is it doesn't work for all kids. It does not work for all kids. And discipline is really an individualized, it should be implemented individually. Because for one kid, a small infraction, and you correct them, and they never get in trouble, that's all they really need to get back on pace. If this other kid is a constant issue, and they did that infraction, you're almost happy that they didn't do the other infraction, right? That's 10 times worse. And, you know, you kind of work on that with the kids individually. You set up, you know, behavior plans. And for a new teacher, reaching out to the school psychologist or an administrator saying, hey, I think we need to really put this kid on some type of behavior plan that we can get him under control. Or, you know, at another school I was principal at, we had adoptions, and teachers would adopt kids and they would visit them every so often and then, you know, give them some kudos or what have you, and then go back to class.
Yeah, even if it was just recess or lunch,
just that extra contact with the kid, just to make them feel like, hey, you are a part, just like you said, they're not a criminal. You know, there are kids that do have discipline issues.
Right.
And we need to take care of those discipline issues. We can't just let them, you know, you can't not address them, but you definitely can do it in different ways that hopefully you get some traction out of that. You know, a lot of people like to jump on suspensions, right? This kid needs to be suspended right now.
Yes.
Well, think about that. First of all, you've got to make sure that it follows ed code, right? You know, there are certain things that you can suspend a child for. Second of all, sometimes if you suspend a kid to go home, what are they going to do at home?
Right. They're going to have fun.
They're going to play games. Is that what you want? Now you're setting yourself up that if you send a kid home, hey, I want to be suspended again because I can go play, you know, my video games. And, you know, I'm not saying not to suspend or suspend. I mean, that's a huge red hot button. But you may want to just think about that a little bit. If you give a consequence of suspension, you know, what is it really teaching that student a lesson? Is it really correcting the behavior? Again, I'm not saying never to suspend. There are times when you need to. But you got to think about, are there other methods that we can use at school that will hopefully curb that behavior? Right.
You've touched on another idea that can be compared to academic growth. Behavioral growth is very much the same way, because in academic growth, you might have a student who started out two grade levels below the one that you're teaching. And even if they don't ever make it to grade level that year, acknowledging their growth toward grade level standards is really critical in order to fill their sail and help them continue moving on. It's the same thing with behavior. If we see over time that there's a pattern of less disruption or less aggression or less calling out, then acknowledging that with the student and just saying, may I talk to you at recess? Of course, they're going to think they're in trouble. And during that recess conversation, say, I just wanted to tell you that I've noticed that you didn't call out as much this week. And it was really nice. And I saw you enjoying learning a bit more. I had a master teacher, my second master teacher, Joan Smart, in the Newhall district. She once told me that, and I loved this, with a particular student who was experiencing disruptions, and this is a great piece of evidence for parents. So a student who's disrupting the class frequently during the day, start out, wear a sweater that has two pockets, start out with one pocket full of paper clips. And each time you have to redirect that student's behavior, move one paper clip to the other empty pocket. And so that way, at the end of the day, you can count how many paper clips you had to move. And if that number is decreasing over time, that child deserves acknowledgement.
Absolutely.
And that's, you'll get so much bang for your buck, but they're not all the same. As you mentioned, what fills the sails of one deflates the sails of another. So these sort of wide swaths of programs that we're using to address behavior aren't necessarily addressing the individual needs of students. I think they attempt to, but they don't necessarily succeed the way that classroom teachers would like to see them.
Quite possible. Yeah.
Yeah. So, what is your favorite principal memory?
Oh my goodness. I've had a lot of really great opportunities serving as a principal. I think, an incredible memory for me is that at Emblem, you know, we were a STEM school.
Yeah.
And we had this idea of, because we did Project Lead the Way, and the junior high did Project Lead the Way, and the high school did Project Lead the Way,
mm-hmm.
and COC, College of the Canyons, they had a, you know, they were into technology, and same with Northridge. We put together a program where we took our students, we took students from the junior high, students from the high school, students from the community college, and students from Northridge. And we broke them up into four different pathways. And in each pathway, we showed what it would look like from elementary all the way to college.
What a brilliant vision.
It was amazing. It was just, and we invited the community leaders into to that day's program so they could actually see. Because a lot of times with elementary, they don't think that the kids, you know, should get the grants and things like that for STEM. A lot of it goes to the junior high and high school. I fought that big time because I think our kids really accomplished a lot, especially through our seminars, right? You know, we had them engaged in so many different ways. And it was a great program that our teachers, you know, put together in their classrooms. But this was an opportunity in one setting in four different pathways to see that pathway change from elementary all the way to college. It was really cool. That was probably one of the most exciting things that we put together. Yeah, that was neat.
I was just going to say that I remember having community leaders come through on particular days, and certainly seminar open houses, where they would say literally the words, "I can't believe that 10-year-olds can do this. I can't believe that 10-year-olds are learning this. I can't believe that 10-year-olds can explain this." And it was because we implemented all of those different modalities into what we did in STEMinars. And I'm telling you, that's a great episode for another visit, John. If anyone wants to know about running a STEM school or starting a STEM program, this is the place to start with John Baker. We can do another show about that, because I think that in and of itself was so monumental. But yeah, that community involvement and seeing what we were doing, they were astonished to see, wait a minute, you know what? Public schools actually rock, right? Mm-hmm. Public schools are actually doing more than just making the grade.
Right, right. You know, and another thing that was really kind of funny to me was Maria Blue, who is a first grade teacher at our site and a NASA master teacher. We went to we presented at a conference, a national conference together. And it was our first year, you know, doing STEM. And so we called our piece Zero to STEM in 180 Days, because that's exactly what it was. We didn't have a STEM program, but with the seminars and all these other things we put together, it was pretty exciting. So Maria said, let's get flight suits, you know, and let's wear our flight suits to our presentation.
That's so Maria.
We walked through this conference with our flight suits on, and people were thinking we're astronauts. And it was just hilarious. Never in my life, you know, as a principal, did I think that I'd be wearing a flight suit at a national conference. It was
right?
Pretty funny. Yeah.
You and Maria really discovered the, the way to bring sort of notoriety to the STEM program that we were running at Emblem. And I know there were so many staff meetings on Tuesdays where you would share with us that you had gone that weekend to a makerspace, event, and you bring back all of these ideas. And I think that was just another way, John, and that we knew we were all in this together. You never asked us to do more than you asked of yourself, and you were out truly living and breathing every moment of your vision of this school. It was so impressive, and it really translated into the success of our students, because how many of them went on and then came back to visit and said, I'm doing this in high school. Like they were participating in the Project Lead the Way what do I want to call it? Pathway through school because of what they were inspired
to
do.
I gotta say,
Emblem.
You know, it wasn't just one teacher. It wasn't just me. It was everybody at that site was a piece of the puzzle. Everybody was an integral piece to that program. They all had incredible strengths. And if it weren't for them, we would have flopped. And I was just so proud of each and every one of the teachers at the site for one, stepping up into something that may have been kind of uncomfortable. but at the same token, we had those community people come through because we did something very special. And we, you know, and our scores were high. I mean, if that was the other thing too, is we still needed to teach the standards, right?
Yes.
It wasn't what we were just having all kinds of fun.
Right.
We also had to work and persevere. And that was one of the things that I really tried to communicate to our kids is that perseverance piece academically. You've got to persevere every single day. But it was really the staff. The staff made it happen. And it was just amazing to see the things that we were able to do with kids.
Well, and the focus school is kind of the thing now. Every school has a focus. I would imagine it's not just here, it's across the country. But it really does require the principal not to drop the ball on that focus, but to keep it in on a front burner right there next to academic success and character building, which was also something you really emphasized. And I think there was not a single student on our campus that wouldn't have said that they were, like if you had said, what does Mr. Baker value more, your academic success or your ethics? I think they would have had a difficult time choosing because it was so highly emphasized. It was just equally, they were equal partners. And I think that that is a real window into what they experience as adults, that you can be the most knowledgeable person in any field, but if you can't work with people or you're dishonest, no one's going to hire you. And likewise, you know, you can be very ethical, but you need to know what
exactly
you're doing.
And I wanted to keep it simple for our kids. You know, I learned, and I know we're going long, but just a quick story. I was principal at another school, and my first visit to the school, they were a California Distinguished School. And I asked kids, hey, you know, did you know you're a California Distinguished School? They had no idea what I was talking about. You know, they had the symbol on the school, and that was it. And so I've always found it, and Emblem was a National Blue Ribbon School. And so it was, I felt that it's very important for students and staff and the whole community to get on board. What does it really mean to be a California Distinguished School? Or what does it really mean to be a National Distinguished School, right? And or a Blue Ribbon School, I should say. And, you know, I figure there's two pieces to that. One is your academic perseverance. You know, you can't say just do your best because no one knows what their best really is. But if you persevere academically, you never know how far you're going to go. You can't give up ever. And then the other piece was, you know, following those six pillars of character, right? If you can follow those six pillars of character and you keep those in your mind, you know, are you being kind to others? Are you being fair? Are you being a good citizen? If you can do those two things, persevere and be a person of good character, that to me really is the essence of what makes up a National Blue Ribbon School and what students need to strive for.
Exactly. Adding great citizens who are capable into this
absolutely
world.
Absolutely. And boy, do we need that.
We need more of those kids.
Yeah.
Right. Well, John, this has been so much fun, and I hope we've literally just scratched the paint off the surface. Or the tip of the iceberg. I don't know. Give me another analogy. But
I think that's it. There's so many complexities to a school. And, you know, I just my final thoughts. I was, again, so fortunate to have the staff that I had. We worked very well together. I had a collegial staff that liked to work together. And they were extremely proficient in the classroom in their teaching methodologies. I was just so blessed. And, you know, just final thoughts to your listeners, especially if they're new teachers, is that teaching is a very difficult profession. And I emphasize the word profession because that's what it is, right? Mm-hmm. And everybody seems to have an opinion on how schools should be run, because each and every individual has been in school and they've formulated their own opinions about how a school should be run, right? But as professionals, if we really look at what's best for kids and they make decisions on what's best for kids, then they're going to succeed. They really are. It's a very high stress job, but they also have to find time for themselves. You just got to balance life a little bit, because if you don't balance life, you're not going to be as effective as you could be. So find a balance. Just know that you're a professional. Make decisions that are best for kids. And also follow those really great teaching methodologies. And they're going to do great.
Yeah.
And I got to say, Nancy, you were an amazing teacher. Loved coming into your classroom.
Thank you. We had so much fun.
We really did. If people could have just been a fly on the wall, they would have gone, this guy's a crackpot, man. What's he doing?
Well, I know kids went home and said, I think my teacher might be crazy. Yes, crazy for teaching.
But exactly.
One of my favorite times that you came in, I had a Yasiel Puig poster on my wall. And you said, are you sure you want to leave that up there? And then we got to have a whole conversation about the importance of character.
Absolutely.
Loved every minute of it with you, John. And thank you so much for being on the show. I hope you will come back again. Next week, we're going to be talking again to Laura Troca about how to identify kids who might be students we want to refer for an SST or testing, or what to do with kids who you test, but they don't qualify.
Right.
So anyway, we hope you'll join us then. And until then, you just keep on raising that bar and tipping those glasses. Cheers, teachers.
Hey, thank you, Nancy. Have a good one.
You too, John.